Hello, and thank you for listening to the AT Tapes, a podcast from the Journal of Athletic Training. The goal of this podcast is to interview researchers and clinicians on current topics facing athletic trainers and discuss how we can utilize best practices to improve patient outcomes. My name is Lizzie Hibbard, and I will be your host for this podcast. I'm a faculty member in the athletic training program at the University of Alabama, and I have a research interest in shoulder and elbow injury prevention in youth overhead athletes. You can follow me on Twitter at EE Hibbard. Before getting started on today's episode, I wanted to remind everyone that all content from JAT is open access, meaning it is free of charge to all readers thanks to funding from the National Athletic Trainers Association. On today's episode, Drs. Ashley Crossway, Emma Nye, and Sean Rogers will be joining us to talk about issues surrounding the LGBTQ plus community and athletic training. All three of the guests are district representatives on the NATA LGBTQ plus advisory committee. This committee is tasked with advocating for an environment of inclusion, respect, equity, and appreciation of differences in both athletic trainers and their diverse patient populations. The committee provides educational resources regarding emerging topics and concerns relevant to diverse sexualities, gender identities, and gender expressions within the profession and healthcare topics affecting patients in the LGBTQ plus community. Ashley, Emma, and Sean have published and presented on student athlete perceptions of LGBTQ plus athletic trainers and athletic trainers' perspectives of treating LGBTQ plus patients. In today's episode, we will be discussing current literature surrounding the LGBTQ plus community, as well as strategies for clinicians and educators on how to ensure their facilities and classrooms are safe and inclusive. Before we begin, I'd like to talk to Ashley, Emma, and Sean and introduce them and welcome them to the podcast. So Ashley, let's start with you. Can you give us a brief background of why you became an athletic trainer and your career progression?
Yes, great. Thanks, Lizzie. I became an athletic trainer after being exposed to my athletic trainer in high school for the first time. I really liked the way he interacted with, the athletes in our school, the care that he provided, and the things that he did outside of your typical athletic training duties. I really like how he connected with the athletes and treated them holistically and just the approach that he had. Because of that, I completed my professional education at the State University of New York College at Cortland. During my time there, I worked a variety of sports. I really fell in love with the profession of athletic training. And that's when I decided I wanted to pursue a post-professional degree. And I went to Indiana State University, originally for its master's in athletic training program. And then during my time there, they transitioned to a doctorate in athletic training. And I decided that I would like to pursue that as well. So I stayed in Indiana for 3 years. I worked as a graduate assistant at a small rural high school in Turkey Run. And then since then, I moved back to New York, back to my home, and I now work clinically at Nazareth College in Rochester, New York, and loving it. I just completed my second year here, and I'm looking forward to, settling down here in Rochester, New York, and just being happy doing the things that I am and working on my advocacy.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Emma, can you tell us a little bit about why you became an athletic trainer and your career progression?
Yeah, of course. So my small upstate New York high school that I attended did not have access to an athletic trainer. So unfortunately, we did not have access to a healthcare professional in our high school. So it wasn't really until I shadowed the athletic trainer with the U.S. Olympic bobsled and luge team that I kind of gained an understanding of what an athletic trainer was. And he worked with high-level elite athletes and was very passionate and driven and was also involved in advocacy. So I decided to pursue athletic training at Marywood University in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And much like Ashley, I decided to pursue my master's in athletic training at Indiana State. And while I was there, they transitioned to the clinical doctorate in athletic training. So I was a graduate assistant with the women's volleyball team at Indiana State. Graduated in 2017, moved to Eastern Iowa with my partner and got a clinical position at Kirkwood Community College. And then after my role at Kirkwood, I moved to Des Moines, Iowa, and currently serve as the assistant athletic trainer at Drake University. And I also teach at Grandview University, also in Des Moines. So very happy in Des Moines and very happy that we have this invitation on this podcast. So thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. And finally, Sean, can you tell us a little bit about your background, why you became an athletic trainer and your career progression to where you are now?
Absolutely, Lizzie. Thank you. Similar to Emma, I grew up in a kind of small rural community in northwestern Washington. Pretty low economic status. Didn't really have much exposure to an athletic trainer or really any other healthcare providers. One of the things growing up that I always saw was people would seek healthcare less and less because they wouldn't have the insurance, the income, or the means to actually see a healthcare provider. When I got to undergraduate at Washington State University, I ran into athletic training quite by accident. I shadowed the head athletic trainer for football and was kind of amazed at how athletic trainers see patients of all backgrounds, no matter socioeconomic status, insurance status, their amount of income. So I kind of fell in love with athletic training and healthcare in that regard. So I graduated with a Bachelor's of Science in Athletic Training from Washington State University and then went on to Indiana State University for their doctorate in athletic training. Finished the doctorate in athletic training at Indiana State University while doing my assistantship with the men's basketball team there. And now I currently am an assistant professor at California State University Northridge in the greater Los Angeles area.
Well, welcome. Thank you all for telling us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today. I'm looking forward to having this discussion with you all regarding the LGBTQ plus community and athletic training. So as we get started, Ashley, can you tell us how you got involved in research regarding the LGBTQ plus community and how you're continuing that research?
Certainly. So this hits pretty close to home for all three of us here on the committee. We were all Indiana State together, which kind of prompted our, you know, interest in getting involved in research and advocacy all together. Initially, back in 2014, I expressed interest to my faculty mentors at Indiana State regarding getting involved with advocacy, pushing for the LGBTQ plus population within athletic training specifically. Unfortunately, at that time, we kind of got given the sidebar, the leadership at the time didn't necessarily think creating a member interest group or anything like that was appropriate at the time, not because of the population, but simply because of the number of things that the NATA had going on. So they kind of went on the back burner, and then I approached Sean and Emma in regards to doing research, because as a fundamental part of our doctorate in athletic training degree, we had to do research. And we thought it would be a very interesting idea to do a three-part approach and to see how student athletes responded to, you know, an athletic trainer who identified as LGBTQ and how athletic trainers respond or feel about other athletic trainers that are LGBTQ. And then finally, how athletic trainers feel about student athletes that are LGBTQ. And we thought that this would be great as a kind of a three-pronged approach and how we could all-encompassingly feel how LGBTQ members related to athletic training and athletics feel about each other and how we can help China change the script or improve things and provide athletic trainers with, you know, fundamental knowledge and initiatives to help improve patient care, but also so how we can improve the overall environment of our athletic training facilities.
Thank you for the overview of how you guys got involved in this area of research. And I think it's great that your research informs your advocacy and patient care and vice versa. And all of those things really go together, which is really the definition of evidence-based practice. So before we really get into the discussion, I think it's important to define some common terminology and common misconceptions, especially with some of the language that's used within the LGBTQ community. So Emma, could you help us out by sort of defining the terminology and setting the stage for some of the things that we'll be talking about later in the podcast?
Of course. So I think it's really important to understand the specific nuances and differences between a couple major terms. So the first one would be gender identity. So gender identity is really defined by the internal perception of one's gender and how they label themselves based on how much they align or don't align with their gender options. Gender identity shouldn't be confused with gender expression. Gender expression is defined as how you present your gender to the world. So through things like clothing or hair or body language, mannerisms, which is also different from sexual orientation. So sexual orientation is the type of sexual, romantic, emotional, spiritual attraction you have for another person. So these three terms oftentimes get confused, but it's really important to understand the specific nuances between the two. And then another term that I think is important to understand is the term queer. Sometimes we often find that the term queer has negative connotations and can be used as an insult, but the word queer has really been taken over by the LGBTQ community as a sense of belonging. So the term queer is defined as the umbrella, kind of all-encompassing term for individuals who don't identify as straight or have a non-normative sort of gender identity. So I think those couple terms are really important to understand. And a thing to note about those terms is if you don't understand those terms, it's okay to ask. And it's okay to try to understand the athlete's perceptions of their gender identity. And one thing to note about that is if you have a student athlete who has a varying gender identity or expression, it's okay to have a conversation about that. And it's okay to have a conversation about what that means to them.
So throughout this podcast, we're going to use the terminology LGBTQ+ in a lot of the discussion. Sean, could you tell us a little bit about the plus and how that fits in within the LGBTQ community?
Absolutely. When we look at the term LGBTQ, it's multiple different populations put together in one act. There are many other populations, different gender identities, expressions, and sexual orientations that aren't encompassed in that simple LGBTQ acronym. So that plus is more representative of all the populations that don't fall within those LGBTQ populations. So saying LGBTQ plus is more inclusive of all the very diverse gender identities, expressions, and sexual orientations.
Thank you for clearing up some of that terminology. So now I want to talk a little bit about how this really influences our patient care and some recommendations for best practices. So Sean, can you talk a little bit about some common healthcare disparities for LGBTQ patients and specifically any common issues in the athletic training setting?
Absolutely. So before diving into this, I kind of want to differentiate healthcare disparities and health disparities and how they interact and really affect the LGBTQ plus population. So when we talk about healthcare disparities, we're referring to access and quality of care for patients who identify as LGBTQ plus. So being able to see a doctor, being able to get quality care, having insurance to pay for surgical procedures or rehabilitation along the lines. And when we talk about health disparities, we're talking a lot more about the unusual or increased burden that a certain population, in this case, the LGBTQ plus community, has in terms of common injuries, illnesses, conditions. So when we talk about healthcare disparities, we see a lot in the general literature that LGBTQ patients really experience lower levels and quality of healthcare. So for example, nearly one in six LGBTQ plus patients, and again, this is looking at lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer put together, have reported experiencing discrimination when seeking healthcare. So this could be going to a physician and being refused care because that physician does not believe it is appropriate to identify as that. We also see that 29% of transgender individuals have experienced severe discrimination and their providers have actually refused to treat them. Now, when we talk about the entire group of LGBTQ+, we see that transgender individuals especially really take the brunt of some of these disparities, more so than really the LGB or queer populations. Now, when we talk about within athletic training, we don't really have much research to talk about the healthcare disparity. is, which is one of the original reasons that Ashley, Emma, and myself really wanted to start the ball rolling and do some research within this area. Moving on to health disparities, we see that the LGBTQ population suffers from increased rates of psychosocial disorders, things such as anxiety, depression, experience higher levels of suicidal ideations compared to their heterosexual counterparts or cisgendered counterparts. We also see that they have higher risks of long-term conditions and chronic conditions like cancer because of some of those healthcare disparities and barriers to actually accessing preventative care. So the healthcare disparities, the accessing that quality care and that barrier to simply going to see a healthcare provider and getting advice kind of causes this cascade effect into health disparities, where because these LGBTQ plus populations don't have the access to healthcare, that they're simply not getting some of the preventative care or care for common injuries, illnesses, or conditions that a heterosexual or cisgender population normally would. In athletic training, we're still kind of diving into this a little bit to find out the specifics of health and healthcare disparities, but pretty commonly researched within the general population, the general medical sector.
In recent years, the NCAA and other organizations have provided some best practice guidelines for inclusivity within athletic teams or departments. However, a lot of times these documents don't really address inclusive healthcare facilities, which leads to some of those healthcare disparities. So Emma, could you talk a little bit about what are some of the best practices for creating inclusive AT facilities for LGBTQ plus patients?
Of course, so one major point that came of our research was that athletic trainers really want and need more training and education regarding the specific needs and the specific approaches to providing healthcare to this community. So one simple thing that athletic trainers could do is just seek out those resources, seek out education and training. One thing that athletic trainers can do is attend a safe space or ally training. And when you oftentimes attend those, you'll get an indicator at the end of the training. Sometimes it's a sticker, sometimes it's a poster. Posting that outside of your athletic training facility, whether it's in the clinic or in the classroom, goes a long way for LGBTQ patients that come into your facility. Another best practice would be to have gender-neutral restrooms in your facility to ensure that if you do have a student athlete who is non-binary, they feel comfortable accessing your healthcare facility. Posting a non-discriminatory policy saying this athletic training room is all inclusive and we will provide competent healthcare to all patients goes a long way as well. So seeking out those trainings and those educational resources, as well as being visible and posting those policies, those indicators or those resources are two things that athletic trainers can do.
So we've talked a little bit about some potential complications and healthcare disparities that LGBTQ patients may present with in the athletic training room. So Ashley, can you talk a little bit about specific considerations for the athletic trainer when providing patient care to the LGBTQ community?
Certainly. First and foremost, I think if we just use a patient-centered care approach, that we can, you know, not have to deal with some of these nuances that people may not be used to dealing with. Just simply treating each individual uniquely in the way that you would anything else that may be different and you're not accustomed to, and understanding how gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation play a part in the individual's entire life and all aspects of their health, and not simply necessarily just their reflection on athletics and their day-to-day life. This really can play an important role in how somebody recovers from a long-term injury in terms of rehabilitation and just their overall health and well-being. Another specific consideration, I think, is just make sure you're trying to make your patient as comfortable as possible, whether that's the way you engage in conversation with them, the way you may have to deal with palpations, things like that. Just as often as we learn in our professional education, you have to make special considerations for cross-gender or changing genders, like a male clinician working with a female clinician. You want to make some of those same considerations. It's all about patient comfort and putting our patients first. Some other considerations is simply use the appropriate pronoun and use the patient's preferred name. Asking them, as Emma said, there's nothing wrong. If you don't know, just ask the patient, let them, you know, describe. The important part is that you're using the same words, the same adjectives and descriptors when speaking back to that patient as that they provided you, and really using interview techniques that reflect what you're trying to get at and that are not presumptuous. The worst thing you can do is assume something or, you know, take things out of context. Overall, just, you know, making the patient feel comfortable and, you know, learning from them. And if they may not feel open and comfortable at first, they will open up over time if we continue to use some of these techniques that Emma described in making an inclusive clinic. When a patient knows that you understand or when that you care for them, that's more important. There's the old adage, a patient doesn't care how much you know until they know that you care. And I think that's a great philosophy for athletic training in general, but also when dealing with LGBTQ individuals, particularly for those who may have limited experience moving forward.
So one of the main results from you all's JAT article, which was titled Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Patients, Collegiate Athletic Trainers' Perceptions, was that athletic trainers had concerns about their lack of training and education when addressing the needs of the LGBTQ population. And I think you guys have all sort of hit on this throughout, that it's something that a lot of athletic trainers feel like isn't discussed or that they don't know enough about. So Sean, if people are looking for additional resources, where is the best place to find LGBTQ plus related healthcare information to really help patients?
Absolutely. And as you said, this is a very large hole in both our professional education and kind of the continuing education for athletic trainers. Very, very big topic. For any athletic trainers out there, no matter if you practice clinically or in an education setting or in an administrative role, we definitely have resources that you can utilize. Outside of the articles that are published in the JAT, the Journal of Clinical Practice and Athletic Training, and the Athletic Training Education Journal, our committee, the LGBTQ plus advisory committee to the NATA, has a webpage on the NATA website. So if you go to the website and you click on professional interest groups and go to inclusion, it'll bring you to our website. We have multiple different resources that are very readily available to athletic trainers and are created by athletic trainers for athletic trainers. So some of the terminology that we talked about today, you can find on that website. Some of the recommendations and advice on how to make an inclusive clinic setting can be found on that website. Ways to address some of the healthcare and health disparities, we have more information available on that website. In addition, you can also follow our Twitter account, our committee Twitter account, at LGBTQNATA, and I believe we'll have a link for that at the bottom of this podcast. And finally, to kind of really hit home what Emma was talking about earlier, our committee has developed a Safe Space Ally training for the athletic trainer. So if you've taken Safe Space Ally training in the past, that's great, and we really appreciate that you've done that. But our committee has created one that's specifically for the athletic trainer that focuses on a lot more health and healthcare disparities and how to address that from a healthcare provider standpoint. We'll be presenting that at the national conference this year and in future years, and you'll see that popping up at a lot of district and state conferences as the years go on. If you're really interested in getting more information and equipping yourself with the knowledge to better treat this population and improve patient outcomes, I would really recommend checking that out as well.
And Emma, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the ongoing initiatives of the NATA LGBTQ plus committee in addition to the education materials?
Of course. So one thing that we are working on most recently is developing a research grant that we will be providing to continue this research that has been happening across the country. So we have identified a lot of gaps in the literature, and we would like to equip other clinicians and other educators with some funding to create some research projects that answer those research questions that we have. We're also working on a state-by-state resource document. So essentially, this is something that the athletic trainer could use depending on the state. And they could go on to the website and click on, for example, Iowa, and they will see every single safe space training, every single college and university that offers some sort of training in terms of LGBTQ leadership. So those are just two things that we're working on, as well as there's a lot of district committees that have been formed in recent months that are also working on specific projects for their district as well.
Well, thank you guys for filling a necessary gap in our profession and helping inform all of us so that we can be better for our patients and better for our communities. So as we finish up this episode, I'm going to ask each of you to provide a take-home message on athletic training and the LGBTQ plus community and how the information discussed today or as part of your committee could be used to impact clinical practice and improve patient outcomes. So Ashley, let's start with you with your take-home message.
I think one of the most generic but important take-home messages is that this is something that's going to continue to change and continue to evolve the way we practice, the way we interact with people, and that although you may go through either our safe space training or another safe space training, this is something you want to continue to come back and visit. Terminology and things are changing just like they do medical terminology changes. It's just something you want to keep visiting and stay up to date with so we can provide the best patient care for all of our patients.
And Emma, can you give us your take-home message?
Yeah, my take-home message is to be an ally, but take allyship one step further and become an active advocate. So oftentimes we hear that we have allies in our community, but there's a responsibility piece that comes with being an ally. So take steps to become an ally, but also stand up to discrimination, stand up to stereotyping, and be an active advocate.
And finally, Sean.
I think my take-home message would definitely be to treat patients as they would like to be treated. Sometimes when we get into the run of things and we're practicing clinically or we're in the classroom and we've done the same thing for multiple years, we treat every patient kind of off of a context. But if we take some time and get to know the patient and focus on that patient-centered care, as Ashley said, and we ask the patient and we treat that patient how they want to be treated, we'll find that patient outcomes, especially for the LGBTQ plus community, will definitely increase.
Thank you all so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time and sharing your knowledge. Thank you for the work that you are doing to improve our profession and patient care.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I hope you all found this podcast informative and that you can utilize the clinical recommendations to improve patient care. That's it for today's The AT Tapes. Please remember to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Also, please follow the Journal of Athletic Training on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at JAT_NATA on all three platforms. Thank you for listening, and I hope you will join us for next month's episode of the AT Tapes. Thank you.